afternoon. Thanks for coming back and listening so soon. Bringing the stories of everyday folks while you sit back, relax, have a whisk, coach. Here we go with the Trend Speak podcast, bringing you insight or bringing a laugh. Here's the man who might have a plan. Give it up for your host, Trent Podskaland.
You know what's funny is only 3 or 4 minutes ago, I recorded the intro for last week's podcast. Because if you listen to last week's podcast, you'll know that everything is coming pre-recorded this time. Typically, I'm recording these intros just a couple days in advance, if not the same day of the release of the podcast. However, this one, I'm recording, what is this, 2 weeks almost? Let me look at my calendar here. Well, just over a week in advance. But that's because I'm on vacation. Yeah, I'm not even here. I got people house sitting for me, dog sitting for me. I am living the life. Hey, last week I talked about how do you know like what to talk about sometimes when you're recording so far in advance? Listen, I don't, but let's talk about something that's top of mind while I'm recording right now. Are Sesame Street characters Muppets? Right, questions you never thought that you would think about or debate on as an adult, as a 30-year-old, or near 30-year-old, not 30 yet. But that's been a constant debate between me and my wife. So much so that I posted an Instagram poll recently to try and see. Let's see what it's at right now. I only posted it a couple hours ago. But let's take a look and see where we are at. Currently, 16 people say no and 11 people say yes, they are the same. I am on the side that says no, they are not the same. Leanne is on the opposite side. Where do you lie? Just kind of curious. All of this, in fact, has absolutely nothing to do with today's guest. So let's just pop into it. This is perfect timing, and I'm not even going to take the credit for this. This was my guest's idea of when to release this. Perfect timing, in line with Father's Day. I hope you enjoy listening to John as much as I enjoyed talking to him. I'm talking with John this week on the Trent Speaks podcast. John, welcome in.
Thank you. Thanks so much. We're glad to be here.
Yeah, of course. It's good to have you. John, why don't we just start out? Sometimes it's easy to start out just broad, and then we can scope it down from there. So talk to me about yourself and how you've gotten to where you are today.
Absolutely. Well, I guess I always like to start out these conversations in terms of myself as saying that I'm a parent, specifically a special needs parent. I'm son to a child with autism. He's 14 now. He'll be graduating eighth grade actually in a couple of weeks, which is very exciting. He's also functionally nonverbal, which means that he doesn't have a lot of oral communication. I started out being a new parent to a child with a disability, you know, again, almost 15 years now, and really having a lot of questions, a lot of anxiety, a lot of fears. And like most parents in our situation. And for myself, what I found was it's been quite a journey to not only really understand how to become a parent to a child like this, but to also understand who I was as a person. Because unfortunately, what happens, I think, with a lot of parents, specifically men and specifically dads in these situations, is that everything in your life gets challenged when you have a child with a disability. Your marriage relationship, your career, you know, your identity, your understanding of, you know, why me, so to speak, which a lot of parents go through. And so over, you know, the time I've raised my child, I've learned, first of all, how to be a dad, how to be a good special needs dad, but more specifically, how to give back and how to support other parents, specifically men, specifically dads. And I qualify myself now certainly as a special needs dad, but now also as a divorced dad. I am now part of that very large number, which floats around 80%, give or take, of families that end up in divorce when you have a disability diagnosis. I have been an educator for almost 20 years. I actually am currently a special ed teacher. I'll be transitioning into nonprofit management very soon here. I actually have a new job offer that's going to be coming up very soon for a nonprofit that also serves the disabled. So it's a great opportunity for me. But, you know, what I would come back to is that from the beginning, I started out as a parent with not a lot of answers, with a lot of uncertainty, with a lot of anxiety. And from there, I grew and I found a couple of things. And most importantly, especially now as we're coming out of this age of COVID, you know, self-help is just a really big, you know, hot button for everybody. And I think rightfully so, because I think people really have kind of been ignoring their own, specifically mental health, for a while now, especially in our society. But what I had to learn was, first of all, I needed to figure out who I was in terms of being a parent and also in the marriage, right? Because you do everything differently when you have a child with a disability. Most dads in my experience, for example, are the breadwinners. They work, they make the money. And mom is the one that kind of handles, I'll make the doctor's appointments, I'll find the therapist, I'll figure out how to juggle all this stuff on the calendar. But in my case, you know, even though I worked, I was never the breadwinner, right? You know, my ex-wife has actually always been the breadwinner. So it was always the situation of, okay, I don't make all the money. My ex-wife was a really great, as we like to say, autism mama bear in this culture. And so she managed all this stuff and, you know, very type A personality. And so it's like, okay, where do I fit in? What do I do? Right. Well, I learned again, not only how to parent my child and parent my child well and really be present with them, but then I learned how to give back and intentionally build community. And so what I've done over these last, I would tell you, 5 or 6 years is really go out of my way to do that. And that started out in small ways that later became big. Small ways like starting a dad support group that met locally in my community. One that started out with just a few dads from my kids' school and now has kind of branched out to more dads in my area, which is the North Chicago suburbs. And, you know, and then, of course, connections from there later all found all just kind of different, you know, roads on the journey type of a thing. I got involved with some other disability organizations in the Midwest and around the country. I started to blog. I started to speak at conferences. I started to do podcasts. Actually working on a book project now, which is slow going, but I'm working on it. But, you know, in terms of all of these relationships that I've intentionally built, it's created a great support network. And through that, I've been able to not only give back, but then also find support for myself, which ideally is how a good support network works, because the reality is you never know when you're going to need it yourself. In my case, I found out, you know, when I was getting separated and divorced eventually from my wife, I really needed that. And during COVID, we all needed it. And, you know, through, you know, other personal life events, right? And so I would tell you that I started out not having a lot of answers and feeling very alone to being someone who was able to really build a network, to build relationships, you know, locally and in a lot of other places geographically, and obviously virtually too. With the focus and the message here being that, you know, we can't do life alone. You know, again, I think COVID taught us that lesson, you know, for everyone, regardless of what your deal is or what you're struggling with. But especially in the disability community, when you have a child like this and you're trying to parent, and especially if you're in a situation like mine, where it's a single parent, you really need people. You really do. And a lot of folks, I think, struggle, and especially men who aren't always great about their emotions and sharing and feelings and all that stuff. It's hard to find and build those relationships, but, you know, luckily I've developed some of those resources. I certainly have, some ways that men can do that. And I'm always open to, you know, having those conversations. So that's kind of me in a nutshell right there.
John, I want to go back to one of the things you had mentioned pretty early on about, you know, when you find out you're having a child who's going to have special needs, there's a lot of emotion that can come with that, or a lot of thoughts that might go through someone's mind. How did you get yourself to a place where you were able to educate yourself and feel like I can do this? Like those thoughts don't mean anything because this is still going to be a great parenting experience.
It really is both feet in the fire, quite honestly. I got to tell you, you know, I remember, when my child was very young, so my ex-wife was also an educator and still is. But I know that, you know, early in our marriage, she had done real estate on the side for a few years. And that meant that she worked a lot of weekends because that's usually when realtors work. And I remember my kid was maybe 6 months, right? And, you know, so still pretty young. I'm a new dad and I'm like, all right, well, you know what? Let's do the daddy something. I'm going to take you out. And there's a local, like the petting zoo type of a place, not far from our house. And they had like a little sit down restaurant and things. And I remember, you know, I was uber prepared dad. I had, you know, the diaper bag with all the stuff and all the stuff to feed him and spoons and bibs and wipes and every darn thing. And it was one of those things where I just sit him down and our son, you know, and again, probably related to the disability, you know, he was kind of a fussy kid. You know, he was a happy kid, but you know, he could still be fussy depending on, you know, new environment, new situation, whatever. So I remember sitting him at this restaurant and he's just screaming his head off and I'm trying to like, just soothe him and figure out what you need. And of course you offer him 20 different things. And at one point I just said, I need to go to the bathroom, man. And so I grabbed one of the servers and I said, listen, I said, do you please watch my son for 2 seconds so I can go to the bathroom? And they were very kind and, you know, they understood obviously. So, you know, it's one of those things where you just got to jump in. Right. And, you know, with the disability, you know, we didn't know that right away either. You know, that also was a stair-step process. You know, there were the signs that the pediatrician had said weren't looking right. And then you see certain specialists and on until finally you get a diagnosis. And the diagnosis really, in most cases, and in ours, didn't come till about three. So you're still kind of struggling for those first few years. But a lot of it was, okay, you know, I don't know what this is. I don't know if it's something my child will grow out of. I don't know if it's always going to be this way. But you know what? I'm just going to parent my kid, right? And I think the message there too is something that I share with special needs dads now, because in the same way that I just kind of tried to show up and said, okay, whatever this looks like, we're just going to do it, buddy. I'm just going to be here. And you know, we're going to try to do it as typically as possible. And if we need to do it a little different, that's fine. And obviously as he got older, that started to look different for sure. But, you know, even with things now, like, you know, my son is, you know, he's, I wouldn't say he's an athletic kid, but he likes to move and, you know, he likes to, you know, go outside and, you know, do stuff. And, you know, he likes sports. He doesn't have the coordination for it because of his autism. But at the same time, you know, he likes watching it on TV and, you know, like we have a basketball hoop in the driveway and, you know, he can't really shoot the basketball, but he sure loves it when I do, you know, and then he'll watch me shoot it. And whether I make it or not, he'll laugh and clap and then we'll do one together and then I'll do another one. And, you know, so it's just figuring out how to be with your kid on their level kind of a thing, because that is one thing that I think dads especially can get shut down with a child with a disability really quick is, okay, this doesn't look the way I thought it would. You know, my kid was going to be a sports star. My kid was going to play travel baseball. My kid was going to do X, Y, Z. And it doesn't look that way, but it doesn't mean you still can't bond and find those moments. So I think early on, you know, I got those lessons when I just thought maybe I had a fussy kid that was just irritated. But then now that I have a child that I understand has a fully developed disability, you know, it's just being present and connecting and just remembering it's still your kid. You know, you can still have those experiences. You can still have those memories and those connections. But again, you also, it's a lot of letting your ego take a backseat to just being present in the moment.
And you've talked about the support and the communities and how big that really is. How did you go from you being a part of those that support in those communities to then moving to the education piece? Like what made you want to say, okay, I also want to help educate other people?
Yeah. So I've been a teacher, you know, since certainly before my son was born, but I never wanted to teach special ed per se. And now of course, you know, kind of branching more into the nonprofit world, that type of thing. You know, I think there's a lot of, you really get humbled. I'll say that. And for me, I'll also mention that, you know, being a person of faith, being a Christian, that has also been part of my journey as well. And again, I realize that that may not be everyone's experience here, and that's totally fine. You know, as I like to famously say, using my teacher brain, because teachers always have fun ways of, you know, putting things together, remembering things. It's a 1A, 1B conversation, right? 1A for me is my faith, because that's actually where my community actually started. It was guys at church who would support me, talk into me, groups that we would do, that type of thing. But 1B is community, right? And so as I spoke in terms of community, whether that is faith-based, whether that is something totally different, you know, depending on, you know, however you create that, you can't do it without it. So for me, I think I learned a great deal of humility, first of all, in raising my child. and really needing the willingness to do things maybe I didn't expect. You know, it's one thing to learn how to change diapers when your child is 6 months old. It's another thing to still have to do it when your kid is 10, 12. You know what I mean? And so there's a humility there that you get on top of the fact that, you know, I guess I also started to see that, you know, in the same way that I learned earlier in life that, you know, I was comfortable and had a gift working with kids and had a passion for that, really this community was something that I also had a passion for too, certainly because of my son. I think that really opened up my eyes and my heart actually to it a lot more. But then, you know, also in terms of just saying to myself, okay, the classroom environment is great. You know, I certainly enjoy serving it in that sense, but you know, I'm always kind of thinking bigger. That's just kind of who I am. So, you know, I've worked for a disability nonprofit briefly in the past, went back to teaching now, and now I'm going to be moving into an organization that actually is it's a faith-based disability nonprofit, but it's global. Right. And so it's on a much bigger stage. And so as I see it, I say to myself, okay, I think of the lessons my son taught me, right? It's humility as a man, as a parent, as someone who has to let go of expectations about what this is going to look like in terms of, you know, me being a parent and what my child may or may not become. And then also too, as that translates into the classroom, it's the understanding that not every student is built different either. Right. And so having the humility to know, you know what, you know, this isn't about you fixing someone, you know, it's not about you fixing your child. It's not about you fixing someone else's child. It's about you reaching them and making that connection. And in that same way, you know, as I've worked with, you know, in the nonprofit world, specifically with adults or older kids, that type of thing, you know, then you kind of see, okay, what are the experiences that I really bring to the table? A lot of it comes out of my parenting experience. And certainly being a teacher, you get humbled a lot, period, regardless of, you know, what age or level you're teaching. You know, but then I think it's constantly, it's almost like that, you know, visual of the layers of the onion, right? You just keep digging deeper. You know, you just keep going deeper and saying, okay, what else can I give? You know, what else do I have a gift for? What else do I have a desire to do or you know, how else can I serve, you know, and what does that look like? And so I think, you know, being a parent just kind of opened the door for me to a whole new world of experiences. And as I like to say, as challenged as life can be, there are a lot of wonderful experiences, a lot of great relationships, a lot of great people, wonderful families I never would have met had I not, you know, had these experiences for sure. So,
John, there's two questions I just wrote down that I could go either direction with because they both fit in here. So I'm just going to pick one. What is it that's kept you going?
Well, I'll go back to my 1A, 1B. So, you know, it's definitely faith for me, you know, and again, you know, I'm not here to proselytize or anything, but, you know, for me that my faith is very specific to me. And I know I need it. You know, I need my quiet time. I need my prayer time. I need my time to meditate and, you know, listen to God. And, you know, for some folks out there that might look different, and that's fine. But, you know, for me, that really is my foundation. And so, because it's been a constant reminder to me that, you know, not that everything is going to be, it's the knowing that everything is going to be okay. But I remember how much, like early on, as a special needs parent, getting some of that advice and people give you some of these throwaway lines like, well, it's going to be okay. Or, you know, God doesn't give you more than you can handle and all this stuff. And you know, sometimes you just want to punch someone in the face, sorry to say, but you know, I'm not a violent person. I'm just saying that it's advice that when you get it, you're like, are you serious? Yeah. Yeah. Are you serious with that? So, you know, but what I've learned also too, is that there's actually a lot of value in, you know, advice that is very simple. You know, actually the fact that it's going to be okay, you know what, it actually is going to be okay, but it's going to be okay because you have a center and you have a foundation that says it's going to be okay. And you can lean on that because you've been through hard things. These things might be new or different, but it doesn't mean that you can't rise to that challenge. You know, I love to famously tell the story of my father. You know, my father was a functioning alcoholic. My father was a blue collar guy, old school kind of guy. He wasn't the lovey-dovey, put his arm around you kind of dad. He was, you know, the dad who would, you know, give you the once over and that type of stuff. But his famous line to me all the time, the biggest piece of advice, and really the only piece of advice he gave me, was don't panic. That's all he ever said was don't panic, don't panic, don't panic, don't panic. You get in a situation, just calm yourself, you know, assess everything, whatever you do, don't panic. And I remember thinking to myself, this is nothing. This means nothing to me. Like, you've given me nothing for life. And what was funny is that about 10 years ago, I went to see this this author speak. He was a guy who came to a friend's church, and he wrote a book on like a fatherhood and this type of stuff, and, you know, kind of a how-to guide, how to be a man type of stuff. And he was from Texas, and he, you know, had kind of a real, you know, kind of football coachy kind of personality. I mean, fun guy to listen to. And, you know, he was up there and he was preaching on a part of the New Testament, which is Matthew chapter 5, which is where Jesus is saying, don't worry about your life, consider the birds of the air, the flowers of the field, and on and on and on. And as he's going on, he finally stops and he looks at everybody and he says, hey guys, what's he really saying here? I'll tell you what he's saying. Two words: don't panic. And I remember sitting there thinking to myself, what? You know, because it didn't make sense to me before. But in many ways, my dad gave me everything that I needed. It was the understanding that it will be okay. You have to believe it'll be okay. And you have to believe in something bigger than you, that it will be okay. And I can honestly say that I forgave my father that night because I really understood what he meant. So things like that, you know, going back to the real simple foundational things, but then also to that community as an extension of yourself, right? Because I'll also tell you another quick little story. It's something I like to call the tale of two parking lots, okay? So 10 years ago, and again, this is way before my ex-wife and I separated, we were going through a similar season. And I remember that I was sitting outside of, you know, the church we attended at the time. I was going to go into a men's group meeting on a Friday night. And, you know, we weren't separated, but, you know, we were just having so much trouble and our son's diagnosis was still new and we're wrestling with all that stuff. And I only had like a couple of my oldest friends that I could call, which they felt for me, but they couldn't really help me because they didn't understand and they weren't parents themselves and this type of stuff. And then I found that the guys in the group, at least the ones that were in the group that I was attending at the time, weren't very helpful. And it was just all this stuff. And, you know, I remember just sitting in that parking lot thinking, what am I going to do? Right. And it's almost like I have no one to even ask. I have no one to talk to. Fast forward, whatever it was, 7 years later, my ex-wife and I were getting separated. I found myself sitting in a parking lot just because I needed to clear my head one day, sitting there. And then all of a sudden now, all those years later, because of the intentional community I had built, I had all of these guys I could call. I had other special needs dads. I had other divorced dads. I had guys who were attorneys. I had guys who I could ask all this other type of legal and financial advice from. I had guys who would just listen to me, right? And so again, it went from having no one to talk to having all kind of people to talk to, right? But over the course of that 7 years, whether I knew how it was going to wind up or not, I intentionally built up that community. I built into it. I supported other men, you know, and not with the expectation that I was always going to get it back. But it's great to know it's there when you do need it, right? And so, you know, I've always been open to listening, to building relationships, to building friendships, and being a support, because I know when I needed it, I was glad it was there for me.
John, earlier you had mentioned the word humble a couple of times, and I know that you do different speaking engagements. I know that you've been on other podcasts, you've gone to conferences. Obviously, you're an educator. What has been the most rewarding piece of it all for you?
I think, to be honest, it's the fact that I get to do it with my son. Because, you know, whenever I do anything, right, it really comes back to my relationship with my kid. Because I wouldn't be doing it if I didn't have a child with a disability. And it's not that I prop him up in any way, you know, as some kind of a, you know, marketing, whatever. You know, I just share my story. And I have, you know, I have pictures of me and him on my website and, you know, my social media and everything and things we do and stuff we do. And to be honest, you know, he's not someone, at least not at this point, who even, you know, attends some of these events to me or whatever, you know, I mean, maybe that'll, you know, get there eventually. But, you know, the fact is that, you know, we just have our relationship. And what's great about it is that people can see, again, look, I'm a guy with a message, but I'm not just someone who's saying stuff because I like to hear myself talk. You know, I've been there, done that. I've had the pain. I've cried the tears. You know, I've had the nights where you can't sleep and all of that. And at the same time, I love my kid, you know, and we have a lot of smiles and a lot of laughs. So I guess the best thing about it has been the fact that we've gotten to do it together. right? And so he's been on this journey with me, and everyone who knows me or anyone that I'm connected with on whatever professional level, you know, they can see that, and they can see the experiences we've had and the stuff we've done, and they'll ask the questions about him. And so he's got so much family. I mean, he's got his own community network. All of my community network is his too, right? Because everyone always wants to know about how he's doing and what's going on with him, so that if we ever visit someone or we're, you know, in whatever part of the country, and hey, let's go check out so-and-so. And these could be people he's never met, but they know all about him, you know, and are excited for him and want to meet him, that type of thing. So I think it's the fact that, you know, that's also something he'll get, you know, to take advantage of, certainly as the years go on, is, you know, this isn't about me. It never was, you know, it was about my experience with him and really just about others and just about this whole kind of family that you create around this. And really looking at the beauty of it, right? I mean, it's hard. I won't deny that. And for any, if you're a special needs parent out there, my heart goes out to you. It's hard, but it doesn't mean that it also can't be beautiful and that you can't recognize the beauty in it and you can't acknowledge all the wonderful moments and the memories that you can create.
John, before we dive into what I call Trent Speaks related questions, what is the best way for people to find you? If they have questions, if they want to learn more, if they want to reach out, what's the best way for them to find you?
Yeah, so there's a number of ways. As I like to always famously say, if you punch me into the Google machine, you'll find me. So if you just put my name in there, I come up. I do have a website. It's just myname.com, johnfeligeller.com. And you'll get a sampling of a little bit of everything that I've done. I do have to update some of the content on there. So if you do want newer or my fresher content, I definitely say check me out on social media. Feel free to reach out to me on Facebook. I have a regular Facebook page as well as a blog page on Facebook. So my blog page is John Special Needs Blog on Facebook. So you can just type that into Facebook, John Special Needs Blog. I'm on Instagram at Jay Feligeller, Twitter, Jay Feligeller 74. You know, you name it, you know, you can find me on there. So, and also podcasts, you know, I actually tried this the other day. I actually just went into my Google Podcast app and I just punched my name in and all this stuff came up. So what do you know? So, you know, the Google machine works. So yeah. So I would say any of that.
Awesome. And I'll have some of that linked in the episode notes as well. John, what is it that you've learned about yourself?
I think I've learned that I'm definitely stronger than I thought I would be. I think I learned that I had more to give than I thought I did. And I think I'm learning, continuing to learn, that there's a lot more of the story to go, right? You know, life has been hard for a lot of us these last few years. And legitimately, there are people who have gone through much worse tragedy than I have or could imagine. But at the same time, you know, I've known the loneliness and the isolation of you know, what we all experienced, you know, in different ways. And the reality is that despite all of it, there's more to go. And so I think it's that constant reminder that, you know what, don't just shut the door on yourself because you had a bad day or even a bad week or whatever it is. Remember that, you know, you have value, and sometimes you don't even realize your value until you've gone through some of these darker times. I know that for myself. You know, I'm grateful for them because I wouldn't have had, you know, certainly some of those moments in the sun for sure. So, you know, for all of you out there struggling, you know, especially, you know, with a child, you know, like ours, I hear you and I feel you, and please know you're not alone. And please remember, community is all around you. It's all around you. And I certainly am always welcome to talk to anybody about, you know, about whatever they're up for.
John, you couldn't have said it any better because you said moments in the sun, which leads me into my next question. What has been the most impactful event or moment that shaped who you are today?
I think I would say it was probably the birth of my son. It was the birth of my son. And maybe that's a little cliche, but you know, when I think about it, what was interesting about his birth was the fact that it was a very hard labor, you know, for his mom, you know, and she did a great job for sure. But it was a long, hard labor. And I just remember that, when he actually, and I don't want to get, you know, too visual here, but when he actually did, you know, come out, he basically shot out like a cannon, and it was kind of like, all right, I'm here, and, you know, let's do this kind of a thing. So, you know, whatever I've done in life, you know, there are a lot of things that obviously, you know, I could always default and say, well, my son this, my son that. You know, I mean, you know, yeah, there are moments when I'm in the classroom that, you know, maybe, you know, I'm working with someone and it has nothing to do with that. But the reality is that in the bigger picture, in the bigger sense, you know, he has changed my life for the better. He's absolutely made me a better person. He has led me down a path that I never thought I would walk, you know, that I just wouldn't have probably even gravitated to at all in terms of, you know, serving this community. And so, if it wasn't for that, you know, I certainly know I wouldn't be doing this podcast right now. I there's a lot of stuff that I just wouldn't have done and would probably not be doing. It's not to say I wouldn't be giving back in a different way, but I think that, this has really allowed me to use my gifts and talents in the best way, you know, and again, something that I would have been totally blind to had it not been for him. So if I have to come down to it, then that's probably where it's at.
John, and this is always my favorite question, the last question that we have, but it's my favorite. So whether it's something that you have mentioned, or maybe it's something you haven't mentioned so far, what is it you want people to take away from this podcast when they listen back to it?
So I'll keep harping on it. I want to go back to really that need for community. And again, like for myself, again, it that goes back to my faith foundation, I guess. You know, I'll put a little asterisk to your last question, because I think, you know, for me personally, becoming a Christian was also very significant, and in some circles, I would say more significant. But, you know, the fact is that, you know, I think it's all very, in terms of my story, it's all very tied in with my son and my experience with him, quite honestly. So, you know, what I want to emphasize to people is this, is that please don't do life alone. Please don't do it alone, right? Because you're not alone. You know, for me, at the end of the day, I'm never alone, because even if there isn't another person around me, I have my connection with God, right? So that's my foundation. That's, you know, that's there every morning, you know, waking up alone, going to bed alone. That's always there for me and with me throughout the day. But in the bigger sense, community, right? Because we all need that as human beings. You know, again, regardless of where you're coming from, you need people. If you don't have people, get you some people, because when the hard times come, right, you need someone to lean on. Here's the one thing about that too. You know, one thing I learned about myself during the pandemic was I often thought that, you know, if you would have told me about this years ago and said, you know, hey, imagine if you were locked in your house for months on end, I would have said, awesome. Oh, there's so much I'm going to get done, man. People leave me alone. That's great. And you know what? I hated it. I hated it, because I'm like, I'm not seeing anybody, like, and the virtual and everything like that. But no, it's not the same. Right. And so I learned that I needed people a lot more than I thought I did. And actually it was talking to a friend that was a counselor that I did a few sessions with. As a matter of fact, we really dug into that and said, you know what, you're way more of an extrovert than you think you are. I'm like, I think so. So, you know, you don't realize how much you need that, because here's the thing. You may think you're totally okay with being alone with yourself, and you might not be, right? There may be things that, you know, it's just a little bit too hard for you to go there, that type of a thing. And I know that's why for some people, having a spiritual relationship with, you know, God, or, you know, whatever your thing is, for some folks, that's hard, because maybe they can't get that personal with themselves, right? But that's where, at least if you have folks that you can, kind of dialogue with you, that you can mirror some things with, that you can just have a connection with, that'll give you that support to kind of push through things, you know, and ideally, you know, you get yourself to a place where you can be totally at peace with yourself in the quiet moments, and also with, you know, the bustle of other people. I absolutely believe you need both, but at the very least, if you don't have people, get you some people, because that absolutely will get you through to the next day.
John, it's been incredible chatting with you, and I could chat with you for much, much longer. But I just want to say again, thank you so much for coming on. My favorite thing to do is to turn it over to my guest at the end so that you can do the sign off. So I will let you sign us off of your own episode.
Well, thanks, Trent. And what I would want to say to everybody out there listening is I hope that our time together has made you feel good on some level. And I hope that it's lightened your day and brightened your day in whatever way possible. And I wish you all nothing but the best. That's good.